Rendez-vous de la Francophonie is an annual celebration that promotes the French language, heritage, and its numerous cultural expressions. It runs March 2nd to 22nd, 2017 in communities across Canada. The RVF series, which showcases the diversity, duality, and dynamism of Canada's Francophone communities, is brought to you by La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Campus and Community Radio Association, Canadian Heritage, and this station. Please stay tuned for the next half hour for this week's edition of Rendez-vous de la Francophonie. Visit ncra.ca/RVF for more information on the series.
My grandfather, my dad's dad, he was from out west, right? And he always had stories of the far west and, you know, cowboy boots, and he smoked cigar, and he was an asshole, but he always had cool stories.
Lonesome cowboy.
Already at a very young age, Isabelle started to be attracted to the West. Growing up in Bedford, a small town 80 kilometers south of Montreal, she spent her entire childhood back east, but listening to the stories of her grandfather and watching Lucky Luke on television vividly stirred her imagination and made her want to explore the opposite side of the country. At only 14 years old, because of some complicated family circumstances, she decided to make a move.
When I was 14, I took off, ran away, hitchhiked all over the country, went to BC, went to California. I was looking at the big signs west, and I was going as far as I could. You know, Tofino, and that's it. Okay, I'm there now. Yeah, I was pretty lost.
So you arrived in Tofino, and do you remember how you felt?
Is the ocean. First time I went to the ocean, it was just like, wow, this is big and I'm so small, and you know. Yeah, it was beautiful.
Even though Isabelle enjoyed her freedom and felt enriched by that big adventure, this trip, of course, couldn't last. After all, she was just a teenager. And although she made sure her parents knew she was still alive by calling them every other week, people back home wanted her to come back.
I was in San Francisco, I think, and I got arrested, and they shipped me back.
Safe and sound, Isabelle returned to Quebec and never ran away west again. Years went by, life went on, but that powerful experience stayed with her. At the back of her head was always lingering that calling for the West. Later in life, when she met her husband Jean-Claude and started a family, the calling resurged, and it was the beginning of an unusual family story.
I flew here when I was 8 months pregnant. I remember getting out of the plane. It was like 44 degrees outside. Like, so Emmanuel, he was born here in Oliver. And then I got pregnant again. And then we decided to move back east.
So my parents couldn't make up their mind whether they liked BC or Quebec most. So they came out here. And Emmanuel was born out here in BC, my oldest brother.
And then shortly after that, they decided to move back to Quebec. Then my brother Ben was born, actually.
I'm not even sure if they moved. I think they moved together to BC. Then they moved back. Then I was born in Quebec. Then we moved back to BC. Then my brother John was born.
Bam, there I was. So I was born in BC. And then when I was about a year old, they decided to move all the way back to Quebec. And then bam, there's another baby came along. That was Dave.
I was born in Quebec, and then I lived there 9 years. And then we moved here.
If you're a little bit confused, that's normal. It took me a while to get the story straight. I actually met Isabelle a few years ago here in Oliver, and we became friends. when I was assigned to do that documentary for Les Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, a program that promotes the relationship between French and English, I had no doubt that the story of her family was pertinent for the subject. Basically, what happened is this. Isabelle and Jean-Claude had four sons together. The first one, Emmanuel, was born in BC. The second one, Benjamin, was born in Quebec. The third one, Jonathan, was born in BC. And the fourth one, David, like you already guessed, was born in Quebec. They moved four times back and forth between Quebec and BC, with almost exactly 2 years apart every time, and every time they had a baby. When I finally understood the family trajectory, apart from being impressed by the symmetry of it, I was really interested to know all the implications of the switching and mixing of the two languages, French and English. But first, I had to ask Isabelle, why did you feel the need to move so often back and forth between the two provinces?
All these years I was pregnant, you know, hormones affected me. And my couple was never a very easy place to be, so I guess I kind of thought that if we moved somewhere, it would make things better. Never did, but you know. And also, the life here is very different than in Quebec. And I always liked it, I think, more here. But then there's like, you know, the family over there. And ever since the first time I came here, I was split in half.
All the traveling and the longing for change did not fix the relationship between Isabelle and Jean-Claude, and they ended up being separated later in life. But before that, things settled for a while, and for about 10 years, the whole family lived in Saint-Malachie, Quebec, without moving. Kids were growing up, immersed in the French culture, and English was fading away. They became a typical Francophone family. One day, Isabelle announced that the whole family was moving back to BC. No one was surprised. But this time, there was an added reason to explain the decision.
I wanted my kids to learn English. Saint-Malachie is really, really French. So they weren't going to learn English.
So here there were two adults, four kids, and a U-Haul truck that was falling apart, driving 5,000 kilometers across the country. Funny enough, the same cartoonish vision that motivated his mom to migrate west had a total different effect on David, the youngest, and the only one who had never made the trip since he was born in Quebec and stayed there the whole time.
I'm like, we're moving from here, taking me from all my friends and all my, you know, everything that I love to go to a desert where there's snakes and venomous spiders and, like, cactuses. And I was picturing, like, sand dunes and, like, you know, from the cartoons and stuff like that. And, like, I didn't want to move. I didn't want to move at all.
This uncomfortable feeling that David had, based on a preconceived idea, did not last long. He told me that, as soon as they arrived, the sight of greenlands, vineyards, orchards, lakes, and rivers quickly put a smile on his face. He was excited to be here, like his brothers were, even before the departure.
Well, at first I didn't really feel too much. I was kind of puzzled. And after a while, it was more like, ooh, this is going to be a cool adventure. You know, like I've sort of remembered crossing Canada, and I had good memories about it.
I wasn't stoked, like I wasn't super happy about leaving my friends or nothing, but then at the same time I always wondered what it would be like.
You were up for it?
Yeah. I think it all went fairly smooth. There was no big, big deal about it, I don't think.
We got here in the summer, so we got to spend a couple months, you know, hanging around, trying to meet kids, and yeah, it was just, you know, BC sounds really cool, so let's go see it.
In 2000, the family arrived in Oliver. They found a cheap place to rent right by the school. At the time, Emmanuel was 15, Benjamin 13, Jonathan 11, and David 9 years old. None of them remembered English from when their parents were traveling across the country. Emmanuel was understanding a little bit of it from school lessons, but that was it. So they arrived, they didn't speak English, but it didn't prevent them to start making friends fairly quickly. This said, it wasn't without a period of adaptation.
My kids, when they first got here, they got bullied. Of course they did, but Ben is one of the bullies, so like he just got into it, and then they all became friends, and they've been besties since then.
Actually, I got picked on at first and stuff like that. Like, I got in a few fights, like, I remember one of my, but see, I'm good friends with all those guys now. It's just like, they're like the skater punks kind of thing, right? And then I show up with my Walmart board, and then they all start cutting me down because the board wasn't worth $100. Like, that kind of stuff, right? And then, like, and then purposely one of my good friends now, he purposely snapped the board. Like, he's like, oh, let me try it. And then, like, landed 2 feet right in the middle to break it. And then I got to come back home and explain why my brother's board's broken. Like, I knew why they were picking on me, right? Because I kind of stuck out like a sore thumb, right? I was the different one.
So you were picked on because you were French?
Basically. Yeah, I knew I was going to be friends with these guys, so I kind of soaked it. And then eventually they're like, oh, this kid's cool.
People were actually fairly good about it. You know, like, here sometimes kids are mean and whatnot. There was some people that bugged me, but mostly everybody was fairly nice. The teachers were quite accommodating. The actual kids I was in classes with, whenever I had a question, they would answer the question. They wouldn't make fun of me too much. I got teased, of course, but to be honest, I got teased a lot less for speaking poor English than I ever did for having red hair.
I was the funny French guy. You know, like, I mean, like, kids would tell me to say stuff to other people, like, hey, say this bad word or whatever, blah, 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 and then sure enough, I wouldn't know the implication, or I would have no idea what it means, so I would just blah, 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 go and say it, but...
I don't know, kids make friends. They just go out and skateboard and play together, and then they're, like, started asking, like, how do you say this swear word in French, or how do you say this swear word in French? And back and forth.
But I mean, do you remember, how did you communicate at the beginning? Do you remember
that? There's a lot of sign language.
Sign language, of course, only works for a short while. To fully integrate their new community, Emmanuel, Benjamin, Jonathan, and David had to learn the language.
They all adapted in English really, really good. Like in school, it took them not even a year and they were up to wherever everybody else was.
It didn't take very long to learn all the basic words and all the basic sentences, and then you really put things together fast, especially as a young teenager.
English was always easy for me to learn, though. It was like kind of always like came just like that, right? Like in learning English in school, in elementary school, I was one of the better ones in class, even though I hated my teacher. Like got sent to the office a lot, but I'd had good marks still. So
I remember that. After like a year and a half, 2 years tops, I was fluent.
According to Isabel and the four boys themselves, the learning process wasn't arduous or painful. The help of two good bilingual teachers, a program on the computer called Rosetta Stone, having new Anglophone friends, and being involved in baseball, scouts, and music, as well as ESL, English as a Second Language, which is a wonderful program managed by the Association of British Columbia Teachers of English as an Additional Language, all of that contributed to the successful transition from French to English. But apart from that, a couple other things possibly made it easier for the boys to become fluent.
One of the really interesting ideas that's out there is that kids are actually better at learning languages.
Professor Carla Utzenkamp is the Canada Research Chair in Language Acquisition in the Department of Linguistics of the University of British Columbia. She was kind enough to meet with me in her office in Vancouver. Here's what she said when I asked her why are kids better at learning languages.
Because they're worse at doing many other things. So they're not as good at what we call self-directed memory. So they can't hold as many things in mind at a time. That ability to manipulate more information is associated with intelligence and problem-solving abilities, things that adults are much better at than kids. But it may be that sort of complex thinking abilities actually interfere with adults' ability to learn language. They try too hard, they think about things, they analyze them in a very explicit way.
At first, yeah, I'm sure it was a little tricky, but to me it was all fun. It was all just games.
The fact that they were young probably helped the boys to learn English. They soaked in the language without thinking about it too much. But also, since they were exposed to English before birth or during infancy, except for David, the youngest, Carla told me that this possibly had an impact on the acquisition of the language.
We now know that kids actually learn an awful lot about language before they're even born. So information, sound information, passes through the uterine wall, passes through the mother's body from the outside. Also, though, they get sound information from the mother's own speech. So sound gets conducted not only sort of from the outside into the baby, sound gets conducted through the body, through the mother's bones and everything else down to the baby. And they're actually learning things about the patterns of the sounds in the language in their environment. And that means that a language that's really around you all the time is going to sort of leave it very early imprints on your brain in a way that something you're not exposed to until you're 3 or 4, it doesn't do quite the same thing. It's like your brain just sort of gets set up and is ready to just learn even more about the language after you're born. You're not starting from scratch at birth.
Here's what I find interesting about what Professor Carla is explaining in relation to Isabelle and Jean-Claude's children. Among the same family, there's a real mixed bag of different exposures to French and English during pregnancy, infancy, and childhood. David, the youngest, was only exposed to French until he was about 10 years old. Jonathan was exposed to French and English from pregnancy to about 1 year old, and then only French. Benjamin was exposed to French and English during pregnancy, then only French from 0 to 2, and then English and French from 2 to 4. Emmanuel was exposed to only French during pregnancy, French and English from 0 to 2, only French from 2 to 4, and English and French from 4 to 6. Today, when you listen to them speaking in English, you couldn't guess they were once sounding like well-rooted French Canadians, and there are two facets of that situation I want to explore. The cultural aspect of it. But first, let's talk about the brain aspect of a major change in someone's dominant language.
People tend to think that your first language is always going to be the language that you're strongest in. But if you are removed from a situation where that language is used by the community, it's not going to be so well supported, and you spend all your time speaking a different language, then your first language and your dominant language may not be the same. So the dominant language is going to be the one. Probably people will have a sensation sometimes that they think in a language. So if you listen to someone speaking, if they have maybe some trouble deciding what they want to say, they can't find a word, they use these forms we call fillers. So these are words like and in English. Well, every language has a different set of these filled pauses or filler words. And you can actually sometimes tell which language someone is dominant in by looking at which filler words they use. So even if you're speaking English, you might not say you might use a French filler word in English. And that's an indication of sort of which your strongest, which your dominant language is.
Like, you know how they say, which language do you think in, right? So for quite a while, I would think in French, basically. And then I would translate what was going on in my head into English to kind of get my point across. And then, I don't know, I want to say in somewhere in grade 11, so just a year and a half after we moved, that process didn't happen. I didn't have to translate stuff anymore. I could just go ahead and speak it.
When I was learning English, I would hear something and then do the translating from French to English in my head. And then, so if I'd go to talk, I'd go translate the French to English. But now it's kind of backwards. Like, that part I've noticed, and so maybe I am more English in that sense.
There was a time period where it was, like, probably a couple years where, like, I'd go back and forth from English thinking in my head to French thinking in my head, and I'd go back and forth. And right around probably, like, grade 10, 11, 12 or something, when I had to start writing a lot of essays for school, then I really started thinking just in English.
There's particular areas of the brain that seem to do the most work when it comes to language. They've been identified as sort of the language areas. They do other things, but they're really important for language. And you can look at bilinguals, you can put them, for instance, in an MRI machine and have them do tasks in their first language or their second language. And you can look at which areas of the brain are most active. And you can compare brain activation when they're doing a task in their first language and when they're doing a task in their second language. And there's various things that seem to affect which brain regions are being used for the first language versus the second language and how much overlap there is. Do you use the same space in your brain for both first and second language, or are they really separated?
Although it sounds like the dominant language of all of the four brothers has become English, it is most likely that the regions of the brains that are activated during they speak French is different for each of them.
And when you learn two languages from birth, there's a lot more overlap. You're using the same regions of your brain to process both languages. When you learn one language early and one language later, then you get more differentiation. So
keeping in mind that there's also other things affecting that phenomenon, it is possible that Emmanuel, who was exposed to English from birth, has more overlaps in his brain than David, who wasn't exposed to English until he was about 10 years old. When they arrived in BC, he was the most French of them all. Today, that situation is completely reversed.
No, nobody knows I'm French anymore. Well, I mean, like, you know, anybody that knows me knows. But, like, when I speak English, people aren't, they don't read a French background out of my voice, you know? They don't like, oh, you got a thick French accent. You know, it's not like, I have a thick English accent when I speak in French. If I speak in French, everybody's gonna be like, oh, he's definitely got another language behind him, right? At first it was vice versa. I'm sure there was a couple years where, you know, you could tell I was a French-speaking guy that turned over to English. But now it's been vice versa for so long that it's, that now I have to dig in my head to find those French words to, like, you know, so.
Do you mind losing your French like that?
It bugs me. I'm not gonna lie. There's sometimes where when I want to say something and I know that I've been able to say it before, and now all of a sudden I'm like, oh, what the hell? I'm trying to get it out and I can't, like, but it's there, you know? As soon as I hear another person say the word, I'm like, oh, I know what it means. I've heard it 1,000 times. I just can't access it. You know, I just can't pull it out of my skull. You know, I just can't pull it out of my skull.
I have to admit that part of the interview started to make me feel strange. I think it was the first time I really gave some thoughts about the reality of losing a language, and not any language, your first language, your mother tongue, that language that brought you into this world. This realization made me rethink my own situation. I'm 35 years old. I've been coming to BC on and off for 15 years, and I've been a permanent resident for the past 5 years. Since I arrived in my early 20s and I kept practicing my French with francophones here and every time I went back to visit in Quebec, I'm not worried about losing my French at all. I have no doubt that I will remain very French, noticeably in my speech, my accent, and my mannerism. But at the same time, I'm thinking that if I stay here for the rest of my life, what impact 30 or 40 years of being immersed in English culture will have on my identity and my sense of belonging. The wise thing to do at that point was to interview someone who has been in a similar situation. Coincidentally, Albert, the four brothers' uncle, was the perfect protagonist.
Okay, my name in English.
In English.
My name is Albert Brunet. I'm in Kelowna. I've been living in Kelowna the past 50-some years. And I'm 72 or 73. I keep saying 73, but I'll be 74 in October.
Albert was born and raised in Outremont, Montreal. At 17 years old, he packed up his things and started to visit the country. He jumped trains, worked on the railroad, drank beers, and worked on the tobacco fields, among plenty other things. He told me that it was a tough life, but it was fun. At this point in time, he didn't know he would never go back to Quebec except for some short visits every 5 or 7 years. He just wanted to travel and maybe get away from a part of his life in Quebec.
I had a really bad relationship with my dad, you know what I mean? As much as he became my best friend not too long before he passed away, we became, you know, because he made his mistake, but I wasn't a gift to raise. And when I turned around 17 there, I wanted something else. So I decided, well, it's time to go. Well, for the first 10 years, I didn't go back east. Even so, I talked to my mom like I missed them. But then when I turned about 25, I met this girl here in Kelowna. And we got married, turned 30. We got married. That didn't work out. Then I got into another relationship with my second wife. And we were together many years. And I've got a beautiful stepdaughter. And that's mostly what kept me here.
Purposely starting a life far away from where you were born is a big decision to take. Like Albert told me, you think you'll be able to go back and visit often, but as you build your life in your new place, opportunities to maintain the connection with your friends and family rarefy. At first, you don't really think about it, but then you realize that time and distance create a big gap between you and everything you knew before you left.
I've chose to move, but I always didn't miss Quebec, you know what I mean? Even today, like, you know, but...
What do you miss about Quebec?
My family, I hardly got to know any of my cousins, their children, and I know none of them. I mean, I had those days, 5, 6 brothers, 1 sister, and I didn't get to know them.
And how does that make you feel?
It's, you know, it's sad.
We lonesome cowboy, lonesome cowboy, you're a long, long way from home.
I'm a poor lonesome cowboy, but it doesn't bother me.
Thanks for joining us for this week's edition of Rendez-vous de la Francophonie, presented by La Fondation Canadienne pour le Dialogue des Cultures, the National Camps and Community Radio Association, Canadian Heritage, and The Station. To learn more about the RBF series and the National RBF Celebration, and to send us your comments, visit ncra.ca/RBF.